And hey, everybody, I'm Chad Eckert, and that's Joe Idoni. This is the Preferred Lines podcast. Follow us on iTunes and YouTube and Twitter, Preferred Lines. Joe, your heater continues. You were on DJ pre-tourney at 20-1. You came on the Fantasy Golf Pod and touted that as your play of the week.
We're on a heater, man. All of us. A triple high five.
Well, that's right. I got in on DJ after round one at 20-1. Thanks to our guy here, the front nine guest of the week, Eric Patterson, EPAC Golf on Twitter.
You got in because of me?
Well,
yeah, I think there's a few others. Don't give me all the credit.
Hey, you're the guest this week. I'm giving you the credit.
Appreciate you having me on. Oh, no, fellas. We got all cracking beers?
Well, you know, I finally got the kid down. I get the freedom of going into the garage for 30 minutes.
I missed the memo.
Well, you probably know how we roll, man. You're the sports betting expert. We're the hashtag not experts. Listen, if you don't know EPAT, you probably are living under a rock. But this guy, he does content for The Score. He's been doing it for a while. If you want to learn a little bit more about his background there and stuff like that, you could look at a fantasy golf interview we did during the COVID lull, where EPAT was generous enough to give me some time. And we talked to him about 20, 30 minutes. So you can go find that. It's on iTunes or YouTube as well. Your content on Twitter, EPAT Golf, it's the best. It's great. It's worth following. So pause this interview, pause this pod, and go to Twitter, follow EPAT Golf. And right? I mean,
before you listen to what I have to say, go follow first. And then, then you hopefully you don't go back and hit the unfollow button.
Or the block or the mute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, here we go. So we've gone viral a couple times together on Twitter,
It was a year ago at the BMW when Bryson was walking around and pacing off his yardages and, you know, lining up a 10-foot putt for maybe two, 3 minutes.
So then you must watch golf all the time, because I don't know how anyone could watch more than I do, but you seem to have like just as much time on your hands.
Well, it is my job, luckily. So yeah, I get to tune in pretty much every tournament, which is pretty nice. And yeah, that's probably why I stay on top of the things that I do. Following equipment, following betting lines, following all the stories. So it comes with the territory, and it's a pretty nice gig. I'm never ever going to complain about it.
Well, Joe, do you want to give a little intro into what is the front nine segment?
Sure, Eric. So, happy to have you on, first of all. So Chad and I what we do here, I don't know if you've seen it, but we kind of put you in a little bit of the hot seat. We're going to take turns sort of firing questions your way, and we'll just keep moving. You ready to roll?
Yeah, hopefully I can handle it. I apologize for not having a beer with me, but one of you boys have a second for me.
You got it, man. Hit it, Chad.
Okay, quickly, though, we did do the interview on the Fantasy Golf Pod. You are Eric Patterson, golf betting expert. Where did this golf betting expertise begin for you?
I mean, expert is a label I typically don't like, because it's tough to live up to an expert. That means you're making it a profession. That means, you know, people either paying for your picks or rely heavily on your picks. And I don't want that kind of pressure. I don't put it on myself. So
no, that's my term for you.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. But that all started when I started writing about fantasy sports maybe 5 years ago now. It's kind of buzzing by, but I started with hockey, started with football, slowly got into the golf space, and, you know, my golf fandom from my childhood has now morphed into my, like, kind of analytic betting mind now, and it's just got a perfect kind of match. I'm still sweating about that expert part, because I'm on here trying to sound smart, but at the same time, we're all in it, just kind of having fun, getting lucky, going through the same process. But sometimes you get on a little bit of a heater. Joe knows it. You guys both know it. DJ treated us very well on Sunday. It's not always that easy, but when it does happen like that, it's fun to kick your feet up and enjoy the show.
Well, Eric, let me ask you, what's your real life like, man, outside of golf? Like, what do you see? I kind of think of you as like our little niche golf gambling bubbles, like Adam Schefter. Like, whenever I see EPAT tweet something, I have to look it up. You're on top of everything, equipment changes, withdrawals, live odds updates. So
Instagram,
are you just kind of always like ready to fire, or will you do it in the middle of dinner? Tell us, what's your life like, man?
Wow. So I'm probably a little more connected than my fiance wants me to be, a little more glued in than, you know, the family wants me to be at the same time, but it is, I'm just kind of addicted to it. I love the news. I love the, like, the little nuances on tour, whether, you know, it is equipment changes. Like right now I'm hawking Rory McIlroy's putter, because I think that is very important for this week. He was using a blade this last week at Boston. If he goes back to the mallet, it could be a time to shove all in. So it's little things like that that I look for. I mean, again, it is, I spend, you know, five days a week actually on the clock with the score. So it's a large part of my day, my week is already glued in.
Okay.
I guess, Eric, I should wait before I move on. My life outside of golf is a lot more golf and sports. I do, when I do take time off, I'll put the phone down. I am able to separate on occasion, but for the most part, I'm pretty glued in. I don't want to come on here and think that I'm just, you know, just a golf nut. I do other things, but golf is definitely the most fun.
You have a fiance, you said, right?
And yeah,
you
live in Toronto. It's tough planning a wedding in the middle of a pandemic. I'll give you that. I don't recommend it for anyone out there thinking about it. Maybe just wait before, you know, guest list can expand. You don't have to wear masks during the ceremony, all those types of things. It's a little stressful. She's obviously taking the brunt of the stress, and I'm just trying to, you know, help her out when I can. It's a trying times, but we'll get there.
Well, let's see. You work at the score, you clock in 5 days a week. So what's your weekly process like, and how do you get to where you're betting things? What's your weekly process and routine look like?
It's probably the same as a lot of people. I mean, Monday, actually even Sunday night, you start, depending on how your guy's doing or depending on how the tournament ended, you might start peeking ahead to next week. Monday, you know, when those odds drops, you're quickly filing through them. Being as maybe as locked in as I am, I'm pretty aware of last week's stats. I know who the guys who are in form. I know their course history or whatever I'm looking for that week. So when it comes to Monday and those odds drop, it's pretty much who do I see standing out as value, and I'll probably, you know, click right away. Those are the gut reaction type bets. You know, DJ Scott from last week, Scott didn't pan out, but DJ did, just pop off the board as, you know, that price is wrong. He's playing well. You know, he fits the course, probably should pop. So it's Monday's, you know, gut check, gut reaction time. Tuesday, take a little more data. Wednesday, finalize the card. But yeah, that's typically how it goes. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you know the drill. Sweat it out.
Well, how do you, at this point, Eric, how do you measure sort of success? Like, are you tracking units up, down, or do you look at your bets throughout the course of a year, or are you just more kind of casual and will take the winners as they come?
Yeah, it's definitely a more casual approach from that aspect. That, again, this goes back to the old expert thing where this is a hobby. It's not something I am looking to spin a profit on. It's something I'm okay, you know, if you're in for X amount, you're okay with moving on to the next week with no damage done. Once it gets to that point when you are really worried, you've probably gone too far. So as terms of tracking goes, or success, it's more just how do I, you know, did I have a fun week? Did I enjoy myself? Is the screen a little more green on Sunday evening? If it is, great. But if it's not, you know, circle back and try to do it again all on next week. But I'm not someone who's, you know, tracking units or pulling up spreadsheets to, you know, figure out how my year was. It's more of a hobby, casual approach.
Cool. That's like us. Now you're tweeting kind of sometimes in tournament bets to make, like you said this week that you saw DJ fourth and tee to green after round one, but he was still 20-1. It just kind of looks odd, or it's not right. Are you doing this a lot? Are you mostly betting, like you said, Monday morning on your gut and then filling in throughout the week? Or do you do most betting in game?
I mean, sometimes I'll sit there like Thursday, Friday night with after a couple live odds, like ads, and I'll be like, why do I even consider, you know, the pre-tournament? Because mid-tournament odds are sometimes way better, or, you know, way juicier, or they react after like two bogeys, or like DJ was a good point where he's 4 under. Why would I pay? You know, why would I take that risk for a Thursday where he could shoot even, could shoot 2 over, where if the line's not going to move come Thursday evening after he's already shot 4 under and, you know, displayed the tee to green game that I want? Like, what, why even take that risk? So sometimes I do wonder why I'm betting pre-tournament, but I mean, you got to do it for the content. You got to keep yourself busy during the week as well. So you can catch some value early on the tournament. I find that you will get those like longer bombs. Like I had Scheffler 150, which, I mean, that was a fun sweat for, as you know, he played in the second to last group until DJ really started to run away. But you can find those long bombs Thursday, Friday, if you're looking at the numbers and if you're really hawking the odds boards, which again, I have the privilege to do. Not everyone is able to do that, but if I see something, I'll fire it out. So just, you know, follow along on Twitter.
All right, Eric, let's talk FedEx Cup playoffs. Let's talk this week. I hate the FedEx Cup.
You're not alone.
I think you're with me on this, but tell me why I'm wrong. What can they do to improve this? I feel like so many of the top players in the world aren't here, and there's guys in that shouldn't be. How did they fix this?
I mean, this year was a little weird. I'll give them that. Like, you know, Adam Scott and Tiger have only played like 9 tournaments, so you'll get guys like Lonto Griffin or Carlos, I mean, Lonto won, but like Carlos Ortiz and dudes at the bottom who just have some pretty middling results. It's hard to judge on this season, but I think there's just too much fat making it into the playoffs, and I think they should trim it down earlier. You know, maybe get 70 guys in on the first tournament, and maybe create a little more cohesion between the tournaments rather than just the points. Do like, you know, a rolling 8-round thing where, you know, it carries over to the next week. I don't know. You could do, I keep clamoring for match play at the Tour Championship. I think you could do, you know, 30 guys or 20 guys make it to the Tour Championship. You give the top few seeds a couple round bye, and then you do a match play format there. So you are going to get, hopefully you'd get 2 to 3 rounds from the top players, you know, the number 1 to 4 seeds. You'd see a lot of golf. There'd be a $15 million match at the end. I think you'd get the FedEx Cup winner, the Tour Championship winner all at once. I think match play solves a lot of problems, but it's probably not the best product for TV. But I mean, the Tour Championship, the way they have it set up now is what it is. The stagger starts tough. It's we've seen 1 year of it. JT blew that. He said, you know, starting with a 2-shot lead was tough on him. So we'll see how the second year goes. But I think there are improvements, but it's definitely better than it was before.
What about this week, the BMW Championship at Olympia Fields? There's really no course history, so that kind of ruins a lot of people's research. There's 70 players. There's no cut. It's kind of odd. Do you have a way that you navigate a field like this with no course history? How do you create a card for this?
I mean, you got to – yeah, sometimes course history can be noisy. It's a lot of – some people rely on it. Others don't. This is where a week where you just go back to the basics, in my opinion. You look at form. You look at, you know, course fit. It seems like a longer course, some long par fives or long par fours rather. And that just screams tee to green, you know, accurate guys, long iron play. It kind of simplifies the process at the same time. It's like a TPC Harding Park type thing. A lot of the majors are like this when you don't have that course history, you're not trying to, you know, bet like a Brian Gay because he's like, you know, 5 years ago he won it or something along those lines. But you're taking the best guys who are playing well and trying to find value. And this week there's a few of those names. You might not go to the top of DJ, but, you know, into the 20s you can find some guys who fit that mold of good iron players, you know, should play well at long tough tracks. So it helps simplify things, but it does, you know, it doesn't give you the best picture of what a winner might look like. You're left to guess a little bit more.
You know, speaking of good iron players, first time we're seeing back-to-back weeks for a one Eldrick Woods this week. You see anything from Tiger last week that would make you think it could be a good play this week?
I already fired on him. I mean, yes. I think a 70-man field is you know, obviously the odds are, the percentage is as small as it might be, it's fractionally higher for someone to win in a 70-man field. And Sunday was his best round he's put together since, I think it was like the 2019 Hero. So all season, it was his best, you know, strokes gained total round. The ball striking was there. He gained like over like 1.5 shots on it off the tee, which is not really typical of Tiger. So Hopefully he can stay loose. It is a health thing, but at like 40, 50 to one, I mean, you're betting a guy who's won 82 times on the PGA Tour. So it's, I don't mind it. Even last week, at the end of last week, he said like, he really wants to get to East Lake. And he said, you know, the easiest way to guarantee a spot at East Lake is to get a dub next week. So he knows what's at stake. Like, I think he wants that 83. He probably doesn't want it to be done in a major. I'm not sure. He just, 70 man field is for at 45 to 1 on Tiger Woods is pretty good.
I love it too. I got it. Now, we're talking about a former world number one in Tiger Woods, but there are a slew of names that are just exchanging this current world number one. To you, Eric E. Pat Golf, who's the number one player in the world?
It's going to be weird to say that it's not DJ after what he just did at Boston, winning by 11. But I think if you had to give me any golfer right now on any course, I think I'd go with Justin Thomas. I think his iron play is, the numbers pretty much prove this. His strokes and approach, he's the best on tour. His putter can get ridiculously hot. He's good off the tee. He's short games. He's got everything. So JT is my guy. I think his game translate pretty well to any course. But yeah, there you can make a case for DJ, you can make a case for Morikawa, you can make a case for McIlroy. You could, there's a handful of guys. Rom, I just skipped over him. He just won recently. So, but I'd go with JT. I just think he has the highest, you know, highest floor ceiling combination that I'm looking for.
Speaking of one guy that was there recently, Rory. So it seems to be this fanless golf landscape has taken a toll on his mental approach to the game, and maybe some others who have been on tour for a while, but the younger crop of guys, maybe fresh out of college, used to playing without fans, seem to be adapting a little bit better. Who do you think this has impacted most in a negative way?
I mean, McIlroy keeps talking about it, so it seems like it's got to be affecting him, because almost every press conference, or, you know, before tournament presser, after round, it's I don't have energy. Even this week, he said he's going through the motions the last few weeks, which is kind of nuts to think about, considering we just had a PGA championship, and that's really not what you want to hear from a top five player in the world. But at the same time, I think he's got to stop using that as an excuse, because other guys have figured it out. Like, DJ's won twice, JT's won, Morikawa's won twice, although he might be one of the benefactors from the no fans. But at the same time, you're competing for the same tournament, same prize money, same prestige. Like, just go out there and stop using it as almost like a crutch as to why maybe you didn't play as well. Get yourself in contention and then maybe use it as an excuse. Because, like, Rory's not even in, like, the final group on a Sunday to – where he would go up against like a Morikawa, where that pressure would actually matter. Like, you know, a Thursday morning 68 with no crowd is the same. Like, that has no impact. It's the Sunday, it's the late on Sunday that Rory's not even experiencing it yet. He's using it as a a reason, or he keeps talking about it. So it is interesting that he still hasn't gotten over that hump, and he's played a lot. So hopefully he can figure that out soon.
And you don't hear it from the guy like Cantlay, who's been struggling, or even Sungjae Im. Do you have any faith that these guys will find form this week?
I thought Sungjae found it. He showed some signs of life at the Wyndham, and then last week was, man, that was a tough shot tracker to follow, because it was all over the place. Cantlay he had like some decent results. I think he was poking his head around at work day, but yeah, he's falling back into the range I would expect to see him if we're looking back at the betting board. Like, he was in there the DJ range. He was below DJ a couple of weeks ago. Like, he was getting a lot of respect, but now at like the 30, 35 range, I think you can consider him there. I wouldn't be surprised if he pops this week. I think he needs a good week to get back into the top 30. There's a few names, like Adam Scott's outside of it, Cantley's outside of it. You know, another one good week and they're back in the tour championship. So I would expect this, if you want to buy on Cantlay, like if you think there's a big week coming for him, I think this is probably the one with no cut. Even if he gets off to a slow start, he can pull it together pretty quickly.
That's a good point. Well, one guy who is not sliding down sort of the points race and is skyrocketing up, seems like he can't shoot 70. Every time he tees it up is in the 60s is Berger. You think he's poised to win one of these big events in the next month? And are they going to let him into the Masters? What do you think?
Those kind of, I think those go a little hand in hand because he just come out and call out. He called out the like Augusta. He was baffled that they didn't, they haven't come knocking on his door yet with an invitation. Mm-hmm. So like he knows he's not in and he's probably going out there to prove, I don't know, with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, he wants to prove that he does deserve a spot or like some kind of special exemption because he obviously knows he didn't qualify. But you know, if he goes out and wins the US Open, how does Augusta not let him in, you know, a few weeks? He's a, he'd be a top like five player at the world at that point. So Augusta can't say they have a like a super strong field if they're the top 10, top five player in the world. I think this like even every week, like Berger's someone who had never overly impressed me. He was winning the same event, you know, back-to-back years, and then he fell off. But, like, now I just – it's like a top-10 machine. So I'm sold on Berger now, and I think this is another good week for him. Someone who is – probably should be priced lower than Schauffele, but he's, again, you know, in that mid-20 range, which I think is a good buying spot. And if you want to peek at him for Wingfoot, I think there's some 40s still floating around out there, which I think is another good number. He should probably be in like, yeah, a low 20s number is reasonable for him at the US Open. So I like Berger a lot, and it's taken a while for me to come around on him, but finally got there.
Okay, a couple more before we get you out of here. Can a long shot win this week?
I mean, this is a tough week. This is a tough week for a long shot. The bottom of the field's pretty weak. There are some guys who can obviously pop. There's some guys playing well, but I would take someone in the top 20 over anyone else. I wouldn't waste even $5, $10 bet on a guy down at like the 500 or like 100-to-1 range. I think, you know, pocket that and put it on one of the top dogs. And I don't think this is a week for a big name or a long shot, big number guy to pop.
Well, speaking of this new course, Olympic Fields, you know, it's Monday night here. We still got time, but I'm sure you've done a little bit of digging into it. What do you see as sort of the top attribute that's going to correlate to success? Are we looking driving distance, approach play? What's the main thing you're kind of zeroing in on?
Yeah, I'm going to probably take a easy way out of this because it's a skill that will translate at any course, even if you know it or you don't know it. But I think approach play is everything. It seems to be the everything every week almost, you know, a good approach, hopefully ride a hot putter, and that's the recipe to success. But those are the guys you're looking for. Like even McIlroy showed flashes with his approach last week, Morikawa, Berger, that type of player who maybe not the longest guy in the world off the tee, but can find enough fairways and attack enough pins. But so like when you don't know the course really, really well, just rely on ball striking and you'll probably get a couple of guys in the running. It's a recipe for success. Morikawa has proven it. Even like Webb Simpson, I think is a fine option. He's not getting a lot of respect, but everyone wants to talk about Bryson and like maybe because he won the amateur here in 2015, but he has been underwhelming as of late. Everyone thought he was going to maybe continue to overpower courses like he's been doing, but he can't put a wedge within like 30 feet at the moment. So it just shows that you can hit it as far as you want, but if you're not putting your approach shots close, you're not going to make enough birdies to contend.
So who will contend? Who is your preferred play of the week? Is it Tiger Woods?
No, it's not going to be Tiger. When I saw this on the sheet, I was like, damn, I got to have to make one pick here tonight. And I don't know if I'm ready to commit to one. but I will, I'll circle back and I'll go with Berger. I think Berger is in a good spot to continue the trend up, finished third last week and like almost an under the radar third. He was just lingering and then just consistent. Like even before the break, he couldn't shoot around in the 60s or in the 70s if he tried. It was just automatic 60, 60, 60. So I think Berger's in a good spot, a good number. I think 22-to-1. I've probably recited that already. But, Berger would be my one pick this week. So now I guess I got to go find a good number on him now that you brought that up.
Well, or you can wait till after Thursday and you just bet it Thursday night.
That's a thing. Maybe he has a late tee time on Thursday. Those odds drift a little bit, and then you can capitalize there. So that's another strategy I like to implement from time to time.
And if you want to do that with Eric, you should follow him because he'll tweet it out because he loves to help people. And it's EPAC Golf on Twitter. Go follow him there. You can do everything you can do by helping him download the Score app and read his articles, right?
That's all. Just get those clicks. I need to – you don't even have to read them. Just open them.
Hey, thanks for your time. I appreciate you, as always.
Yeah, again, appreciate Eric having Patterson. Me on, boys. Good luck this
week. Thanks, EPAT. Best of luck, buddy.
Cheers, boys.
See ya. There we go. All right. Eric's the best. How great is Eric?
Awesome. What a chill dude. Awesome to talk to him. I've never spoken to him before. I know you have, so seems like a very down-to-earth dude just dishing out winners on Twitter, man. That's what we're all about.
Dude loves and is immersed in golf. Like, I thought I was obsessed, and it's like we exchange, like, how do you record your – how do you watch your – you know, so it's, like, funny. And like
he's got a lot of golf miles on those eyeballs here lately.
Yeah. All right. Now, let's get going. We got a lot to talk about. We only have about 10 minutes left or whatever. We're entering the second round of the FedEx Cup playoffs. This is the top 70 humans on tour at this point in this weird 2020 season, and we're at Olympia Fields. And it's new to the people. But it's not really new to Bryson, who won the 2015 Amateur. You're going to hear that this week. You're going to hear about the U.S. Open in 2003, or Furyk won over a bunch of random names. Shall we get to the tippity-tip-top? And we look at the board this week and see Dustin Johnson, the champion last week. Crazy.
Yeah.
Complete control, cruise control, DJ. Can he do it again?
It's just so tough to go back-to-back like that, man. Those last three rounds, I mean, he was 26 under par in the last three rounds. That in those three rounds, that's enough to win every tournament this season.
Oh, wow.
And really? He did it in 3 days. It was unbelievable. The guy was just driving it with so much swag. His approaches were unreal, and he putted the best he has in a long time. That's not often you see a victory of that magnitude in terms of first to second place. Unbelievable.
But you're paying for it, Joe, this week.
And we hit it. We hit it, baby.
Well, yes. We hit it at 20, which was a ridiculous number. But 8?
No, not 8. No. Not 8. I am on somebody sort of at the top of the board here, though. And I took Justin Thomas.
Okay.
Eric said that he liked him this week, was the number one player in the world. I completely agree. I think that his, and he touched on a little bit, his floor in terms of when he doesn't have his best stuff, he still finishes in the top 15, top 10. When DJ doesn't have his best stuff, when Bryson doesn't have his best stuff, when Rory doesn't have his A game, they're missing cuts. Justin Thomas is still lingering. He always gives you peak effort, and this guy crushes this region. I know Kentucky or Louisville, where he's from, isn't necessarily Midwest, but close enough, right? That's where he's from. Just one south win there by 3 strokes. You take it back to Medina last year, which was also in Illinois, won that by 3 strokes. You go back a little further to Firestone, won that by 4 strokes. You look at the Memorial in Muirfield Village, which is in Ohio, which is next door. Second, 18th. This guy crushes this region. He's long. He's straight. He hits his approaches with as much touch as anyone. 14-1. I'm in on JT. Do you have anyone up here?
Well, you could go with Rahm at 10 or Bryson at 14, or you could go with Rory at 18 or Xander at 18. And I did both of those because I think – of course, Xander, the no-cut king, due for a win. That's a great narrative for a sucker like me. And then Rory, too. I mean, he can't be any worse than he was. I think this is the most events in a row without a top 10 since 2003 or something crazy. So, like, he needs a top 10. He will compete. He'll flirt with – I liked what – the competitiveness with Tiger this over the weekend. So, I'm into Rory, especially at 18 when you're typically seeing Rory's the one at 10. So
yeah.
I'm buying 18, Rory. Let's go to the 20s. And you got some value here with Webb, 20, Berger, 22, EPAT's guy, Daniel Berger, and then Morikawa, 22, and Jason Day, 25. Any interest in Morikawa at 22? Didn't he do this exact same thing at the Travelers and then came back to Workday and won? 22?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm weird on Morikawa, man. I just haven't been able to really get him right in his career. It feels like one of those guys that just, I know that he's winning. He's won twice already, but I haven't seen it coming. So I just don't feel like I have a good read on his game. Okay. I do like Berger. I have not bet it yet because I'm in pretty steep with JT at 14. So I'm trying to navigate sort of the rest of my card to see if I have room to squeeze him in at 22. It's a low number for Dan Berger, but like we talked about with Eric, his form is as good as anybody on tour right now. He's playing these irons that are like 10 years old that he put back in the bag. I don't know how he's doing it, but if any sort of par four, Berger has a birdie putt for 10 feet.
Right.
You know, you put a 5-wood or a 3-wood in his hand on a par five and he's average, I would say. But a par four and you stick a 6 or a 7 iron in his hands and it's to 15 feet. He's unbelievable. Even the longer par threes he plays well, which there's four of this week. I feel like he's a good fit. It's just a pretty low number to pay on Daniel Berger. So I'm still hesitant.
Right. It's weird having to bet 22 on Berger and you can get Morikawa too. I mean, like, that's weird.
And Webb, you know, he's right there too.
So it's frustrating because that's what it is. It's a 70 man event. It's the top humans in the world, and there's 17 people under 40-1, and in 30-1 range there's 7 of them, and it starts with Cantlay, who can't really do anything. Really, Reed 30, Finau 30, Hatton 35, Tiger 35, English last week's guy 35, and then Kisner too. He's played super hot, but for me, I know you probably find him at 40, but I found him at 35 and I went right at him because I don't care, because it's hashtag Tiger Week, Joe.
Tiger Week. Let me hear it. Well, give me some reasons. I saw
it
the
was shirt. Just Shark Week or whatever. I think or Shank Week. I don't know what. But our guy Charlie R. Cross 1990. He loves a good hashtag week. And this week is hashtag Tiger Week. And I have a massive bet on Tiger at 35-1. He's ready to win. I saw him win in October. It was great. We saw him T4 out of the Hero. We saw him 9th at the Hit Farmers. He loves to do well. He loves what the last three starts: 40th, 37th, 58th. Meh, not great, but he's finding his form. He's doing his thing. I like the way he played on Sunday. I like the way he got up and did that. And we know he's 57th in FedEx Cup points, so he needs the points, and this is the week to do it. We know a win will get you 1,500 points, and that'll get him close to where Webb is currently. So he like literally needs that. And the last time he played two events in a row was February of 2019, so it gives me pause for concern, but he did follow his T15 at the Genesis to a no-cut T10 at the WGC Mexico. So I feel like, okay, maybe he knows what he's doing going to a no cut for the second week. This means a lot, but like, it doesn't mean anything. I want 83. I think it's hashtag Tiger Week. I don't really care. I don't know much about the course. That helps him probably when people don't know anything about the course. Let's do it. It's a spot for him. We know he picks his spots. Yep. He's been waiting for this moment, Joe, and I'm all in. It's this week. 35 too. I love it for Tiger. Hashtag Tiger Week.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you can even find that a couple points higher if you look around a little bit, but I'm in on it. It's as simple as this. For me, I didn't even look at any stats. When you look at that number next to Tiger Woods and you see that he is playing well and doesn't seem to be dealing with any injury is right. The big thing. You just take it. He's the funnest golfer to root for in the game for everyone. And you see a 35 or a 40-1 on him in a shortened field when he seems to – his body is cooperating with him. And he wouldn't do this. I don't care what you say, FedEx Cup, anything. If his back was not right, he would not be teeing it up. So you see that, I'm in.
Let's go to the 40s where you can find Hideki and Scott, but you can find the young guns, and we love them, Hovland and Wolf. And you've tweeted it out. We're both in. Hovland and Wolf at 45. How do you not – do this? I mean, first of all, there's no pressure from the crowds. The young guns are just taking over, and they grew up with the FedEx Cup, Joe. They like it. They know it's more important to them than it is to the Hideki's or the Scotts. They're just here for the financial payday to boost their portfolio. The young guns want the credit. They want the wins. They want the playoff victories or whatever.
Everything's important to them. Look, so anytime that they can tee it up and compete with these guys, especially you factor in the money, you factor in the incentive, you factor in the trophy. This is a meaningful event to them where you may see some guys in the top half of this odds board coast a little bit this week. I don't want to call out any names, but if you got a guy that's a shoe-in for next week, that's the more important event for them. They're kind of positioning themselves these two kids go for it. They go for everything. They want the wins. They're both 45-1. They both played here in 2018 at the Illini Invitational. Wolf won. Hovland finished sixth. They've got a little course experience advantage on everyone else in the field, right? These guys don't walk into any tournament on the PGA Tour and feel like they're more familiar with the course than the rest of the field. Doesn't happen for them. This is a week where kind of the roles are reversed. They've seen this course most recently. Enough said, 45-1, put them both on the card. I couldn't pick, so they're both on there.
Dude, we have these people in the industry that are focused on stats, and when you look at these young players, they haven't accumulated enough years to have bad stats or trends or anything. Like, ew, he's not a good putter. Well, we don't even freaking know yet if he's a good putter or a bad putter or whatever, so just – focus on the fact.
I don't want to hear about the simulations. If we had more time, I'd go on a rant right now about the projected models and 3%, 4%, whatever it is. I can see these two kids are playing good golf and they're ready to win. I'm in.
All right, last couple minutes. We got the 50s at Casey and Louie, the 60s with Fitzpatrick and Horschel. You got 70s with Norn and Woodland. Any interest in that? I got none.
No, kind of a staggering to see Gary Woodland at that number, but he's just been bad, man. I looked, tried a lot to look for a reason to bet Gary Woodland. Nothing for me. You got anyone in the triple digit long shot range?
Not really. Right now I have a couple at 80 because you can get, I mean, Answers at 80, Henley's at 80. Those are going to be popular looking names, but then Champ and M are my flavor of the week at 80-1.
Okay.
Sungjae, you know, he had to play with the Bryson baby who was saying sound travels like a total Karen, and it just shook Sungjae maybe and just made him play bad. And then Champ too. We saw him play well at big field events. So I like Cam Champ. That's a big number.
Yeah, I'm skipping over it. I just think the number's a little shallow on these guys, to be honest, in this field, given the way, you know, they're that number for a reason. I took a stab at a really big number on Kevin Na is 175-1. Okay. Actually played pretty well last week when I dove into the stats. His approach and off the tee game was there. He lost strokes putting at the Northern Trust and still finished like 30th. He never loses strokes putting. One of the best in the game. If he could rebound, I think it's a decent top 10, top 20 play at a huge number. I mean, 175-1 on Kevin Na, he's usually in the 50 to 60 range coming into most events.
Cam Smith might be the flavor of the week at 150 because of his iron play last week. Do you want to recap our preferred players, or do you want to just follow us on Twitter and get them there?
Yeah, I'll post later in the week. I'll go real quickly. JT, Tiger, Wolf, Hovland, and I'm between potentially either Berger, Hatton, Finau are my other two guys.
Dude, I'm all in on Tiger. I like the young guns and Rory and Xander at the top and maybe him. Thanks, A-Pat. You're the man. Rate and review. Follow us on Twitter at Preferred Lines. Thanks again for listening, watching, and being a fan. We appreciate you. Right, Joe?
We appreciate you. Hey, Chad, let's go hit another winner, huh? Another show double up. Let's go, baby.
Maybe it's Wolf. Ha-hoo!
We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace. Thanks for watching.